Morning Show. Happy Tuesday. It's Text Line Tuesday. Get in the text line, 590-590. Let us know how you're feeling with all this MLB chaos. Your excitement for Hagen Donner. And more.
Hagen Dazs.
That's got to be his nickname. Like, there's no doubt about it.
I just don't think that a kid from Huntington Beach would say, I go by Hagen. I could be wrong, but I would say that my guess is that he says, hey, my name's Hagen Danner.
I don't know, because I can picture like a surf, but it's Hagen, bro.
Maybe.
Just like you got the hang loose going.
I wonder if John Morosi knows anything about him.
You're coming in off a crispy wave.
Yeah, but that's all. This is just like trade him now. If that's trade him right away. Blake says that you got trade value now, so let's go.
No, I said he's on the 40, man.
Let's ask our boy John Morosi about it. MLB Network and Fox Sports. Good morning, John.
Googling him right now.
Good morning. What a week in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Have you even slept? I saw that you were tweeting like 2 hours ago. You're all over the map, eh?
Right. So it's true. I think my last tweet was at, 2:04 a.m., and then I had to wake up early here to make my wife her coffee before she goes to work at the hospital. Aww. So it's back to the normal Morosi routine. I've got a three-year-old now who's asking me for her cereal, so it's pretty typical morning at the Morosi household.
I like picturing your wife elbowing you like, you're dead asleep. You've been working all night. You finally fall asleep. She's like,
coffee.
It's coffee time.
Oh, yeah.
Give me the coffee.
That's exactly how it goes. Like, okay. I mean, that's, you know, again, when your wife's first name is Doctor, you just do it.
Well, that's right. Have you been jumping out of bed with a little bit more vigor because of all this stuff happening?
I think so. And obviously, the Javi Baez news last night is interesting here in Michigan. We'll see if things get finalized there, but they're close on that one. But no, I think in general, it has been exhilarating. I've never seen a period of time in the sport since I've been covering it like this. This is truly a unique set of days. And obviously we understand the CBA deadline and the way that it's motivating a lot of this, but it's funny. I said this yesterday. I'm usually a spectator when it comes to days like this. I'm usually watching Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick, and they're breaking hockey news, and that's we don't have this in baseball. Like, we don't have that big day. There's not a July 1 in the sport where all the signings happen, then we all go up to Muskoka. Doesn't quite happen that way in baseball. So unique way of looking at things here, and it's been kind of fun, and I'm just hoping that the way that things play out and the positive vibes that we're seeing in with all these signings will eventually lead the people who are negotiating the CBA to see that there is wisdom in keeping this train moving, and that there's actually a lot of great things happening in baseball right now.
So a lot of things have happened, especially around the Blue Jays, in and out. Before we get to Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman, you tweeted late last night around 2 a.m. That Javi Baez is close to signing a six-year deal with the Tigers. He had been a guy who was attached to the Blue Jays a little bit, both for need and because he's the brother-in-law of Jose Berrios. And then you had also mentioned that the Jays have some interest in Chris Taylor as his market picks up. Do you think the Jays are done before this December 1st cutoff, or are we going to see a little more from them maybe by this deadline?
I don't think anyone's done yet. There's going to be a lot of activity. I do think Taylor is someone who could sign by Wednesday, by tomorrow. He has a lot of interest in him. He is someone that fits a number of teams, including the Jays, because of his versatility, his athleticism, great teammate, World Series champion. He checks every box. He's been a playoff performer for a long time. So with the Jays, I really think he fits the Jays almost as well as he fits anybody else, because he could bounce around the diamond depending on what you want to do at third. Obviously, he just gives you different options now that Semien's not there any longer. He fits your club in any number of ways, and I would say he is probably the highest priority for Toronto now would be Taylor. I still think pitching is an option for them to pursue at some point, but there's not a player on the market who provides the depth of offensive versatility and defensive versatility as Taylor, because he can bat anywhere you need him to bat. He's just a really good all-around player. I do think Chris Bryant is someone that the Jays are talking with, have talked with. It's unique, certainly, that Scott Boras represents so many of these people, because we know the Jays were talking with Semien a lot, and Semien's agent is the same as Chris Bryant's agent. That's Scott Boras. So there's been dialogue there. There's an understanding that even as the Semien deal did not happen to Toronto, you regroup and pivot and take a deep breath and think of who else is on the list. And in this case, one of the people that's still on the list here is Chris Bryant, and he's represented by the same agent. So it really creates some interesting internal dynamics there.
So Chris Taylor, I've had high hopes of the Blue Jays acquiring ever since three baseball people I really respect all came up with the Jays need to get Chris Taylor this offseason during the playoff run. And that was Schulman, that was Ennis, and that was Brunt. All three of them were like, that guy would really fit.
I think Schulman even joked with us, like he called Chris Taylor future Blue Jay Chris Taylor at one point.
So I'm actually going to be disappointed if they don't get him, because it's very, very clear that the Blue Jays want some kind of a super utility player, right? Like, they're in on Baez, they're in on Chris Taylor. They've coveted lineup versatility like the entire time that this front office has been in existence. And so, yeah, it does feel a little bit like not like there's pressure on them to get this player. And obviously he's got a healthy market, as you just outlined, like for good reasons. But yeah, I would like to see them grab him. If they don't end up these two guys through free agency, John, I'm assuming that we're just waiting, like the trade market materializes once we've figured out all the CBA stuff.
Yes, I think that free agency is the big push right now, and then we'll pick up trade conversations whenever we have a CBA. Let's hope it's sooner rather than later. But it does seem to me that trade-wise, we might have to wait a little bit longer. That's my vibe on Luis Castillo and Tyler Mahle and Sonny Gray, the troika of Reds pitchers who are out there and available. It doesn't seem to me that they're close to anything. I think the Craig Kimbrel trade market is also interesting, because he's out there, but he's probably not going to sign until after Raisel Iglesias signs. So he won't be traded until after Iglesias signs. So there's a lot of waiting, and there is still that domino sequential order phenomenon that often happens in the baseball offseason. The difference now is that it's compressed into like 4 days, and it's been riveting, really. It's been a lot of fun to follow. Seager, I think, got way more than I expected him to get. He's someone who's had some injury issues in the past. For him to get more than $300 million guaranteed is an extraordinarily good job by Boras. And he gets him to Texas. Texas has spent more than $500 million in the last 3 or 4 days after finishing in last place. Just think about that sentence for a minute. I mean, there's just extraordinary things happening around the sport right now. And I do think, again, on some basic level, it underscores the health of the industry. There have been proposals by MLB that seem to address a lot of the players' concerns. And B, it really would appear to be difficult conceptually for there to be a lockout when there's been $1.65 billion in salary just given out over the last several weeks. So it's these are fascinating times around the industry for sure.
And for Jays fans, yesterday was a bit of a tough pill to swallow when Robbie Ray took his self outside of the Blue Jays organization. And what are your thoughts on maybe you have a little bit more insight, but would he have taken less to remain a Blue Jay? What are your insights on maybe how the deal went down?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ailish, on that, because I do think he was very comfortable with Pete Walker and the Jays overall. I also think that once Gausman signed, then I think that changed the calculus a little bit, where perhaps the Jays were not really going to be able to compete with the ultimate numbers that the Mariners put out there. That would be a lot of money. If you're the Jays and you were going to spend upwards of what it would take to get Ray on top of Gausman and the Berríos extension, I just don't, and Ryu as well, obviously that's a significant contract. I'm just not sure that there was enough cash allocated in the payroll to do all of that. That would really leverage you pretty significantly. My view is now if you're the Jays and if you're going to add a starter, it will likely be someone who's a little bit of a shorter-term, higher-risk type option that gives you some more certainty. For me, it really changes things when you look at the back end of the rotation. And if you've got Stripling or Pearson for the fifth spot, that's fundamentally different than each having their own spot in the rotation, which is the way it was before the Gausman signing. So I think there's a lot to feel good about if you're the Jays from a rotation standpoint. And to the question about the trade market, the Jays have a very good farm system, and they could, I think, be very opportunistic, whether it's Alejandro Kirk or someone else, to get a starting pitcher via the trade market if they wanted to go that route. And again, if you get a starting pitcher in the right service time class, it's an inexpensive player for whom perhaps Kirk would be a fair option.
So in looking at the deal Robbie Ray got and the deal Kevin Gausman got, on the surface, it's, hey, there's a $5 million difference, and that allows for a little bit of, would you prefer Ray or would you prefer Gausman, all else equal, because it is fairly equal there. However, the third-year opt-out for Robbie Ray is a factor. The comp pick's a factor. In terms of market and industry, how close are those two deals actually? Like if a Blue Jays fan is trying to contextualize how much better the deal Ray got was, it goes beyond the $5 million, but how do you quantify that, or how do you contextualize that?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Blake, because for me, when you look at this at this comparison here, the numbers were closer than I thought they would be when the offseason started, to be candid with you. I also think that there was a higher level of interest in Gausman than I realized at the outset, too. And he really, his consistency, the steadiness of his resume over the last couple of years puts him as one of the best starters in the game from the standpoint of you knowing what you're going to get with him. And I think the Jays are at a spot where, and probably the industry overall, is at a spot where, coming off of the shortened season and how different pitchers responded, consistency really matters. And Gausman has been really consistent. And that, to me, I probably should have seen at the outset of the offseason that his market would be almost as strong as Ray. And to your point, the draft pick compensation being part of the Ray conversation and not Gausman, I think very easily could help account for that relatively on a percentage basis, small difference in what their overall guarantee was. So it's very well said on your part. I think it speaks to the closeness of those two pitchers in the eyes of the industry. And you look at what Gossman's done since the start of last season, I believe he ranked third in ERA plus among pitchers with a significant amount of innings, ahead of Gerrit Cole. This is a really, really good pitcher. So I think the Jays did exceptionally well in that area. The Berríos deal was very good. And so now I think you're able to make another move or two, but do so with knowing that you addressed the most significant need, which was you had to either re-sign Ray or sign his replacement, and they did that with Kevin Gausman.
Do you think there are any concerns about Robbie Ray when the Blue Jays were figuring out if they want to go with the Gausman or the Ray situation, or everything you just outlined about Gausman having the little bit extra edge, is it just all about preferring him?
You know, it's an interesting question, Halos. I think a couple things there. With Gausman, I think there was a real comfort and understanding that had come out of the previous courtships of Gausman, the previous two off seasons, and so I think that they were able to pick up that conversation at a pretty comfortable place, to the point that it wasn't like this wasn't almost like a free agent that was where the conversation was starting at zero. It was almost as though Gausman had already played for them because they had talked to him in his representation so much. His agent is the same agent as the agent for Marcus Stroman. There's a familiarity in doing business with that particular agency and the Jays, and so I think it was a comfortable, familiar feel. I think with Ray, he's someone that I still think that what he figured out is and should be sustainable. I mean, he was just someone who was able to fill up the strike zone in a way that he hadn't before, and his stuff is just extraordinarily overwhelming. It's a little different profile and stuff than what Gausman has, but I also think Gausman is someone who has pitched in the AL East. He's pitched on good teams. He understands how to handle a hitter-friendly ballpark. Like, for all those reasons, there was more comfort with Gausman than there would be with your usual free agent coming in from outside. You know, the Jays saw him a lot in the AL East. They pursued him as a free agent. This is the third time they've done that. So there's a lot of knowledge of who he is and what he's all about, and I think that makes for a very comfortable conversation. And one of the reasons why Gausman is a Jay, and I think they put their best effort forward on Ray. I know he really loved working with Pete Walker, who's outstanding, but I just think that overall the dollars were on the slightly on the edge of Seattle, and the Jays love having Gausman now.
And we love having you on. John Morosi, thanks so much for taking the time this morning. Go get your that cereal on the move for the kids.
Yes, I will do that, and I will resume our Lucas Raymond Calder conversation when we next speak, okay?
Yeah, and we'll break down those World Junior rosters, too.
I love it. I'm getting ready. U of M, Michigan's got 7 guys going to camps, 2 for Canada, 5 for the U.S. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun.
There you go. Have a great day, John. Thank you so much.
All the best. You too. Thank you.
John Morosi, MLB Network and Fox Sports, helping us break down Robbie Ray to Seattle.
A good energy guy.
Kevin Gausman to the Toronto Blue Jays.
He got me feeling real excited about Gausman.
He's good.
I don't even care about that anymore. Now I just care about Chris Taylor. I'm like, this is me. What's next? You know, what now? What next? All I want is Chris Taylor.
Speaking of, we got a good question on the text line about that. Chad from Peterborough. Chad, is Chris Taylor profile much different than Espinal? What did Brent say his reasoning was on for not wanting him? What did Brent say his reasoning was for wanting him? He didn't say the word not.
Yeah, I was confused by that.
It's early. Well, it's okay. Chad from Peterborough. Yeah. Well, did you dirty? Sorry.
Chad. Glad you mentioned it, because it's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
We're all glad for Chad.
No yum, yum, yum today, Ailish? Come on.
Yum, yum, yum. That's not my role.
She says it too, though.
Yeah, that's an overload of yum.
Vic got all excited because I said it's time to talk about Chris Taylor, and he went, oh, yeah. And sometimes he locks in, and you could tell he wanted to just flip his mic on and go, yeah, bro, Chris Taylor, bro. Yeah, bro, I want Chris Taylor, bro. You know it. That's your whole take, right? Is it any more complex than that? Nope. Knew it. All right. What are we chewing on today?
So when you hear talk of super utility guys, I think generally we think of guys who have a lighter bat and who can just kind of fill in around the diamond, you know, like an Espinal, where it's like, hey, Espinal had a good season at the dish last year, but he's not what you'd call a threat at the dish.
How dare you?
Chris Taylor is one of the most positionally versatile players in baseball. There were only 4 players of all last year who played at least 5 games at second, short, third, and all 3 outfield positions. If we want to loosen that up, let's just say corner outfields and the 3 infield positions, and only 3 games. There were 9 guys. Chris Taylor is the only one of those guys who can hit a lick.
Yeah.
782 OPS, 20 home runs. And this is not an outlier season for him. He actually had better seasons the 2 seasons prior and in 2017. Mm-hmm. This is a guy with a 779 career OPS and 799 during his time with the Dodgers. He is the outlier when it comes to super utility guys also being able to give that to you at the dish. And some of that is, if you hit that well, if you're a 20 homer guy with 800 OPS, usually you can just stick at one position. But the value Taylor brings is not only, hey, you can play him at second or you can play him at third. He can be the backup shortstop a day that Bo Bichette sits. If you get off of an outfielder in a trade, he can also fill in the outfield. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the only guys in baseball, maybe the only guy in baseball, that can do that while also contributing at the plate.
Oh, let's get him.
Something to chew on.
I have pined for Chris Taylor for quite some time now.
Yeah.
Pined. Yes.
The one that's gotten away.
Well, he's the one that's gotten not close. Mm-hmm. Been on the Dodgers. This is actually going to be a sneaky bit of an interesting offseason now for the Dodgers, too. This has been a little bit unspoken, but, you know, you lose Corey Seager. You got outbid. You might lose Chris Taylor. Lost Max Scherzer, and it's not like he was Mr. Dodger. I'm just saying that was someone that they went out and acquired, and they weren't competitive for him. Obviously, the Mets just blew him out of the water. But, yeah, I like going out and getting players from good teams who have big moments.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, the teams that have the money and go out and pay and win baseball games and a lot of them and then get in big spots. That's what I love about Chris Taylor. I don't have his numbers in front of me in the postseason, but I feel like that guy has come up in a multitude of massive spots and really come through. He has been one of their, like, every playoffs you have that discussion of, wow, Chris Taylor, did you know he used to suck? And now he's this guy on the Dodgers. So I'm a big Chris Taylor guy, and I've been a big Chris Taylor guy. It's just, this is actually one where I'm really curious to see where that number would come in around, because everyone should be a Chris Taylor guy. Like, all those things that Blake just outlined, it's like, that's the reasons why. I'll admit, there's a little bit of relief for me that the Jays are not going to be getting Javi Baez. I was never in Team Javi Baez. I think it would have been kind of like a fun thing when he was here. Javi Baez is obviously the kind of guy when he's on your team, you love him and you have to go all in and just love Javi Baez. But from a just before it was happening standpoint, I went, why aren't they targeting Chris Taylor more than him? And so I'm down with this.
Chris Taylor, by the way, his career OPS, .842 in the postseason.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's a stud.
Yes.
Absolute stud.
Some of the clutch statistics that I won't bother explaining what's behind them, but also grade him quite well for the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, we've watched him in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He's good.
Just saying. You said you didn't have the numbers in front of you. I do.
Yeah, so, I love it. All right, so that's something to chew on. If the Blue Jays don't get Chris Taylor, will you riot?
It's text line Tuesday. Keep them coming.
Yeah, the Chris Bryant thing's interesting there, too, and I won't spend too much time on it, but obviously Chris Bryant is a monster pedigree guy, a former number two overall pick, a guy who his first three seasons in the league, he was a 6, 7, 8 win player. And that's, I mean, it's fallen off a little bit, but the last two full seasons, he's been worth almost 8.5 wins total per Fangraphs. So not as versatile a piece as Chris Taylor, surely. And both of these guys are right-handed bats. And I know that given how the front office has talked about lineup versatility, there's that maybe raises a flag, but Chris Bryant is a very good hitter outside of that pandemic shortened season where he only played 34 games. So another interesting name to file away.
Love it. With the Jays rotation, who do you think starts opening day? Text line.
Let's save that one for after the break, right? Or no?
Get the text coming. That? No,
yeah, just because we got the text line after the break, right?
Text line after the break. But that's an easy one. It's Berríos. It's obviously Berríos. It's easily Berríos. It's 100%.
What about?
No question.
Opening day.
Yeah.
Opening day.
Opening day is on the road, so I'm with that.
Yeah. Opening day.
I think they'll want Manoah to start the home opener.
Yeah. A little homegrown kid.
What? Do we have the schedule? Are they two separate things?
We don't. Yeah, they are. So they open on the road in Baltimore. We just don't know what time yet.
We don't know what time. That's big for right now as we're sitting here in the darkness, in the Game of Thrones darkness. Yes. It's like, what time is the Jays game?
In 7 months, I need to know.
Thursday, March 31st.
Next year.
Against Baltimore.
When is the Jays game?
Yeah. And then game four is the home opener.
Hit us up on the text line, 590-590. Shoot us a DM at JD Bungus, at Eilish4far. And don't DM Blake. You can tweet him.
Sure. I mean, you can DM me too.
He just won't read it.
What? I have open DMs and this is the whole thing.
I thought you were Mr. Never Send Me a DM. This is a hard shift. We used to always say, promo the socials, and you were like, don't say my DMs.
No, I joke about don't send me your bad takes.
Okay. That's what we're doing
that's
here.
What, that's what people DM you. Like,
what are you talking about?
My DMs are nothing but people's bad raptor takes.
Okay.
It's my whole career.
Some good raptor takes too. It's text line Tuesday. Fire away. 590-590. JD Bungus, Eilish4far, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan 590. Sportsnet Fan 590.
What are you, Will?
I'm just so excited because guess what just came in? Ross Tucker's Take Fives have arrived in the studio.
Yeah.
If you don't remember the bet we had way back when Dartmouth football spanked Princeton football, and we made a bet, he had to send us Reese's Take Five. They have arrived in the building. You can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to have this maybe closer to the 9 o'clock hour. They look a bit
chocolate bar-ish.
Breakfast bar-ish. Yeah. They look chocolate bar-ish.
Insulin is through the roof.
210 calories per pack. But you know what? high in
sugar.
I'm trying to find 6% of your daily iron intake. Yeah. There you go.
Here's the thing. It's a chocolate bar. You don't need to sell anybody on it being a health product. I will say this though. We had Tim Biebs yesterday.
Yeah, we did have Tim Biebs.
We're having Take Fives today. We've had chips.
We're spoiled.
It'll be super cool. Well, two things. One, Ailish's mood when the food comes and her just excitement for the food testing. If you listen to the show and you in some way are connected, send our show food. Send us food. Do it.
It makes the day swell.
You can text in 590-590 and Daniele will get your information for sending food. Yes, he will. Yes, he will. You shake your head, but yes, you will.
Send in the food,
especially if you own like, you know, somewhere to eat, like a real place where we could have food that isn't candy and
maybe
chips.
Breakfast food.
Like, yeah. I would have a little omelet maybe.
Oh, an omelet is what you'd have. Omelets, you know, breakfast is a tough one to actually get ordered. You can get a breakfast sandwich, but it's tough to actually, you can't get an omelet delivered to you. That's death. Especially now that most of the delivery services, you see how I didn't plug one?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's real promo.
You're getting good with the Blake.
You know when it's wintertime and you see the bro on the bike? You're like, no, man.
He's going all out.
It's too far. It's going to be freezing cold.
They've got chains on the bike.
And I
got
to tip you more because I feel horrible that you're out here grinding on your bicicleta.
Side note about that. The other day I ordered something from the food delivery site.
One of them.
And it said, your delivery person is en route and they were walking.
That's how
close the thing was. And I thought, that's embarrassing.
Not only is that embarrassing for you.
Because I could have just done it myself.
But I actually think that's unacceptable. Like you have to have at minimum a scooter.
They shouldn't let you also order from a place that close because it's just embarrassing.
What is it?
I don't know.
What if you're sick and what if you broke your ankle?
I just have to pretend that I'm ill or I
Yeah, exactly.
Can't get out.
You come to the door.
I never greet them at the door anymore because I don't want them to see that I'm a fully functioning human.
No one meets them at the door. And the move you always have to do if you're me
because you order.
To
see how I live.
Yeah. But the move I always have to do is, hey, everybody, food's here. Hey, gang. Hey.
Thank goodness they sent four sets of chopsticks. Yeah.
I was about to say the other day I ordered sushi and there's like multiple sets of chopsticks. Yeah. I'm like, this is for me by myself. Thank you for. Yeah.
I love
shaming
that.
Me.
Yeah, they're like, this is obviously for you and your whole family. Feed your children with this.
Oh,
boy,
God.
It's a huge order. Better put four sets of chopsticks in here.
By the way,
hey fam.
To kick off text line, this is an anticipatory text, mm-hmm. not one that's actually come in yet, but we're going to get one at some point from Denise from Drumbo.
Yeah, nice.
Hey, Denise from Drumbo. Yeah.
She did not believe that Ross Tucker was actually going to send these because it had been so long. So she had actually arranged for us to, my godmother, my Aunt Lindsay, is in Florida right now.
Cancel it.
And is coming back.
Bring more. They might be great.
Coming back with Takes Five for us.
I got to tell you, though, if I'm Ross Tucker and someone told me that.
He'd be pissed.
Oh my God.
Side
never.
Note.
Hang on. The text here. Damn. My Take Fives just arrived in Drumbo. Hope you guys like them.
Wow, what was the border just like analyzing the Take Fives and sent them through on the same day?
Can I just make one suggestion? Hey, Denise from Drumbo, maybe try one piece of candy in your whole life.
She's not going to do it.
Maybe just one time, let yourself live a little bit.
Take a
break from chin-ups.
No.
And hit a chocolate bar.
I was home on the weekend and they went out for dinner in Plattsville and she's getting the like high protein salad.
Yeah, of course she is.
So anyway. It cost Ross Tucker $29.55 US to ship those six Take Five bars.
The money we pay him?
That's right, actually. That's nothing.
Yeah.
You think that's too expensive? Don't lose a bet.
Yeah, that's right. Don't make bets.
Shout out Dartmouth football.
Don't make bets. You can't cash. All right, let's hit the text line. What do we got?
Hey, guys. Why is John Morosi so damn nice? He's just a pleasure to listen to.
No.
We agree.
Is that from John in Michigan?
No, it's not, but.
I'll say this, too, though. Morosi is one of those guys.
Oh,
I've met him a bunch of times too. Whenever he comes in the city, and he's just one of those guys that, like, when I get to an office, especially if I'm, and I would say like I can be pretty extroverted, but when I get to an office, and especially even if I know some people, I'm kind of like, yeah. If I bump into you, then we'll have a chat. But I'm not actively going out and seeking to hype people up. And John is, whenever he's in the building, he's just like walking around being like, hey, JD, how you doing? How's it going? Good. Blah, 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 blah. Like, he's a million miles an hour and he's just like hyping you up and you're like, wow, you're really nice. And he remembers weird things. You know, that's a real sign of a nice person because that means they're listening and they remember that little thing about you and you go, oh, that's really sweet. We had a little connection. So no, he is that guy. He is unbelievably nice. Him saying that he wakes up and makes his wife a coffee is the least shocking thing ever.
I think we deserve that at a minimum.
I would say every relationship.
What do you mean we?
Every relationship I've ever been in.
If we're praising a guy for making his wife coffee, like, oh my goodness.
I need a simp.
It's not about making the coffee. It's the idea that this guy was up at 2 a.m. doing baseball news, and then he's like, yo, don't worry. I'm still going to get up bright and early, crack a dawn in, and hit the kitchen floor and whip one up. That's a nice move. The least we could do. Again, who are you getting? Your cat?
Like, no one's giving me coffee.
Like, John, there's two ways to approach this, right? It's like it's the set it the night before, whether that's, you know, pre-schedule the pot or at least like get the stuff out. No. John strikes me as like
he's grinding the beans.
He's grinding those beans. Ground those
he
beans.
He sings some little song, guaranteed.
Yes, he wakes his kids up with a little
a little melody. Like, you know, in the Cinderella where the little birds are dressing her and they're that's exactly
I was going to say like you at 5:45.
Yeah, that's me every morning. Okay, let's get to some real texts.
Ouch.
Wow.
Oh,
no,
John.
No, sorry.
John's really nice. We should be nice to John. And they'll say,
John's
something
a lovely
relevant.
Guy. So Tim from Alliston, has the price for Jose Ramirez gone up now that it's the offseason? That is who they should prioritize rather than a Chris Taylor. Can play third base and second base. Use the money to pursue one more bullpen shutdown arm late in the game.
There's like 100 things wrong with this text. I'm sorry.
Oh, Tim, sorry.
Yeah, I don't mean to be just like cutting ribbons here this morning, but first of all.
He also said sponsored by Healthy Planet. Do I need to send that every time now?
No. I don't even know what that means. So that's another thing.
Is he just trying to plug his own thing?
No, Healthy Planet's like a, anyway.
Continue. Yeah, yeah. So. You don't need to choose between those two guys. The Jays aren't looking at Chris Taylor as Jose Ramirez. And if they get Jose Ramirez, he's playing third base. He's not playing first base. He's not, what was it? Like, they're getting Jose Ramirez in a trade. It's completely exclusive of any other offseason move. This was kind of the thing that we were getting at with John is, hey, right now, this feels like deadline day. That's the thing he was expressing, the excitement of being around and saying, oh boy, let's go out and get some pieces. Let's go out and get some things. The Jays have a first baseman is Vladdy. Vladdy's playing first base. Like, that's what's going down from now until, I don't know, he can't be in the field anymore, if that's everything. But if you look at Vladdy, by the way, what's going under the radar, I would say, so far this Blue Jays offseason? Vlad Jr., there was a little bit of concern on my end anyways that it was going to be a bit of regression when it came to diet. And he did it now, right? Like, he proved it. And now there's a lot of it was a confidence thing. He's grinding even harder. Mm. Dude's even in getting in better shape right now. He's got a Denise from Jumbo kind of account where he's just grinding and working out away. So I'm buying in on even more Vladimir Guerrero Jr. stock. Either way, like, if they sign Chris Taylor, don't take this as any indicator that they're not going to try and still go out and make a splashy move via trade. I think that they want to add one more piece via free agency of consequence. I think they want to add another depth pitcher. And I think that they're still going to make a splashy trade at some point once the CBA is figured out, because they know they just lost Marcus Semien's bat and they're not replacing that with Chris Taylor.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Jose Ramirez is that you're pulling from a different asset base, right? Like, he's makes $12 million this coming season, and then you have a club option for $14 million in 2023. Like, that's way below what a guy like Jose Ramirez would get on the market.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, we set up the budget yesterday and it's like maybe there's like 15 to 20 million left in it with some wiggle room, obviously. Jose Ramirez is more than comfortably fits in that. The bullpen note there is just like, I think that's further down the priority list. Like you're not going to see, like, look at what they paid for Yimi Garcia. Like, the bullpen is something I will worry about later.
Yimi Garcia better be good. I got to say, like, I didn't realize. I thought that when that's signed him, it was like a $900,000.
No, not 2 years, 11 mil with investing for well, 6 mil more.
But I didn't even know that until today, because again, I was out at a party on Saturday. Yeah. And so I didn't look at the contract. And then who cares? Because Gossman signs, right? I was going to start the Monday show with like, hey, and also Yimi Garcia is a guy I never heard of before and who Daniele loves.
Look, I'm not going to do the whole baseball savant thing with Yimi Garcia, but I see some stuff there. I think they're going to have him trim a pitch or two from the pitch mix and just like, hey, you're a fastball slider, maybe one other pitch, because he has two really good pitches and throws a bunch of bad pitches too much.
My only thing is like, If it's that simple, why didn't they get the other? Why didn't the other organizations do it? Right, well, like they all have baseball savant too.
Well, I would say he was very good in the Dodgers with the Dodgers. So don't tweet. He had one bad season there, but otherwise he was a sub 4 ERA guy every year. Mm. And then he was in Miami. And what are you going to do in Miami?
Drank there a lot.
Yeah,
I hit some beaches, went to karaoke, and a couple of football games. All right, what's next?
Here's a text for you, JD.
Yeah.
Whoa,
they're all for JD.
What is your reaction? Oh, no, sorry. I don't want to read that one. Always been curious, JD, why the Seahawks are so bad. And what moves do you think they need to make in the next few years to be contenders again? Mike from Toronto.
Okay, Mike. You've always been curious why they're so bad? Just watch them. There's nothing good. They're bad this season because Russell Wilson. Here's my theory. I think Russell Wilson's checked out. I think that early on in the year, once he got hurt, the season was done. They needed two Geno Smith wins. They got one Geno Smith win. And then when Russ came back, they had a couple winnable games, and he wasn't ready to win them. And now I think the whole team feels that nobody's on the same page and that everything is over. And maybe Pete Carroll's gone, but who knows? Because they have a really tough ownership situation where it's the worst thing you want is an owner who's like completely not invested and is basically just saying, hey, sure, you run the franchise, general manager and coach. And the Seahawks have a really bad general manager and a really bad coach. They were good at one point, but the league has passed them by. They were ahead of the curve at one point, and now they're way, way, way behind. They have a quarterback who I think is checked out. They have a quarterback who's hurt. They have a quarterback who's sick of getting beat up and is probably thinking about the next chapter in his life. And I'm guessing that his teammates around him see that. They have a massive diva wide receiver in DK Metcalf, who deservedly is a diva. This isn't even like a shot at him. Like that's receivers in general, who's not getting the football. They have a rushing attack, a team that's supposed to be built around the run that doesn't work. And then they have a defense that's frankly pretty soft that has not been able to hit on a star playmaker in quite some time. They've had some okay guys filling in some okay spots. And then they also made that horrific Jamal Adams trade where they gave up two first round picks for a guy that just passed Vince Wilfork in interceptions and he plays safety. So
this is the first I've heard you mention Jamal Adams.
Yeah, it's just a disaster. And so if the question is, how are they going to get back to relevancy? You have two options. The one I see that's most palatable to me is that you don't trade Russell Wilson and you fire the coaching staff and you fire the general manager and you find some way to try, because it's the NFL. Money and one good draft can change things. You don't need a first round pick. That's the most palatable way for me. I can't stand Pete Carroll. I can't stand John Schneider. I know they brought a Super Bowl. I can't stand them. I think they're brutal. But I think the more realistic path is you fire everybody and you also trade Russ, and it's a complete changing of the guard, because there's just bad contracts and no anything. And I just think that they need an identity shift. I think that they need a clean house and that they finally need to accept that the defensive era is clearly over, but now the Russell Wilson era is over. And that, yeah, if you can get multiple first round picks, and maybe I think you have to get one piece back that's a surefire piece, not just a draft pick, like someone who's already had success in the NFL. But yeah, I think it's time for that moving forward, and trust that you can get back there with a new man, with a new regime. It's a tough thing to do, though. It's a really, really tough thing to do.
Feel for you, thoughts? Buddy. Feel for you.
Thanks.
That's all I got
to
say.
Look, you have to do it at a certain point, though, right?
Like, yeah.
I was going to ask you this in the next block when we have Trey Wingo on about is Carroll done there? But you already answered it for me.
Well, so. That's one of the worst parts is like, hey, man, Pete Carroll's the oldest coach in the NFL. He's older than Bill Belichick. And yeah, you look at the way that he coaches versus the way that other coaches are deploying their teams right now, and just the conservatism. The way that he runs that offense and the way that he runs that team in this NFL is laughable. Like, it really is. It's laughable. He's terrible. He's really, really terrible. What's next? I can't talk. We have Trey too. Like, I can't. This is trauma.
Here's a text, didn't put their name, so yeah. Please do that.
What's up, no name?
The Koepka-Bryson match just showed how important Tiger is to the sport. Expected, but so sad we won't see him a lot anymore. Go Tiger. And I know we wanted to talk about Tiger's big interview yesterday and how it's pretty sad because that might be the end of us seeing Tiger, you know, as frequently as we had hoped. Obviously, he went through a very traumatic experience, but he opened up about feeling like he's not even really at the halfway point, and he's might be picking and choosing things down the line when he gets back to full form, if he does.
How'd you guys just feel watching that, reading that?
Pretty sad, honestly. And as someone that's had injuries, obviously not to the extent of Tiger Woods, I totally understand the dilemma where you want to get back to it. You like are itching to be back into your routine, like your sanctuary. He talked a lot about what it's like for him to just go out and like have a club in his hand, like how he wanted to have a golf club in his hand in the hospital bed. Like he just misses that. Like that's such an identity of your life, like playing a sport since you were a kid. So it's really sad to read it because it sounds like he's almost missing that identity in everything. He said there's even times when he was back up functioning and able to walk that he would just go out and lie on the grass for a few hours so he could like be outside. And it was really hard to read and to see because the pain of that he's going through missing a integral part of his life sounds really sad. But the fact that he's able to watch his son, who's kind of carrying on that little bit of a legacy, and he's getting an opportunity to be back in the game in that sense was promising. I could see him maybe having more of a role in like media or in coaching or with his son's career down the road, but it really did sound like he was losing hope that he would make a return.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's sad from a just a general golf perspective. Obviously, it's sad for Tiger, but like, I don't know the sport of golf without Tiger Woods right. involved mm-hmm. in it. He turned pro in 1996, so I'd have been 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And there's never been a, you know, a Sunday you turn on to watch the final mm-hmm. round as guys, you know, battle out those last couple holes without Tiger Woods. And like, obviously, there's the odd tournament in the last couple of years. We've gotten a little more used to it, but that's it. I mean, like, I know this isn't the case. You don't think this way maybe about Madden anymore, but like, he's the guy on the video game. Like, it's Tiger Woods golf. It's like that is the enormity of Tiger Woods to this sport, and especially to a casual person like me who golfs maybe a couple times a summer, not much, fires up a video game once in a while, and again checks in on Championship Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger's the guy. He's the draw, and he's also your gateway into seeing and learning about the other golfers who are at the top of the leaderboard that weekend or who are on the come up. So I don't know, man. I don't know golf without Tiger Woods.
So a couple things. Tiger Woods is one of the, I thought about my Mount Rushmore of greatest athletes I've seen in my life that I've actually watched. Like, I didn't put in Wayne Gretzky because Wayne Gretzky's prime was like literally before I was born and when I was an infant. So I have Michael Jordan, number one, always will be. I was a kid and he was the boogeyman. LeBron James, Tiger Woods, and Tom Brady. That's the four. And Tiger, in a weird way, is just the most irreplaceable, and it's not even close. It's not even close. To think about how someone, like LeBron is around. Like, I have two NBA players on that Mount Rushmore. I've seen Sidney Crosby. I'm now watching Connor McDavid. Like, hockey players. There's incredible hockey players. But, and as special as McDavid feels, I haven't seen enough of his career yet to put him in that echelon. He's got to win. He's got to do a couple things. But, man, there's nobody like Tiger in terms of the meaning to the sport. Tom Brady's going to retire someday, and the sport's just going to move on. It's going to click on. We even did, and incorrectly so, it kind of actually shows the importance of Tom Brady, but we even did the thing with Patrick Mahomes last Super Bowl where we went, hey, could this guy end up being the greatest quarterback of all time? And I don't think it's actually off the table. Even though Mahomes lost and he struggled, I don't think it's off the table that we'll have those conversations, especially considering the length of what his career is going to be and how, well, you would assume that eventually Tom Brady is going to retire. But I don't know if golf can survive without Tiger Woods. And I don't mean that, of course, as the sport, like, blah, blah. Like, of course, everyone's still going to play it. It's rich guys who love it. And it's got a ton of backing. It's going to be fine from a people who play standpoint, yada, yada, yada. As a sport that the public pays attention to, we're just still living in the wake of Tiger Woods. Like, 4 days of a golf tournament is a lot to ask of even a casual viewer. And really, we're talking about four majors on the calendar. Ain't nobody watching Farmers Insurance Open without Tiger Woods coming back from an injury. You know, like, that's, he is of critical import. And I just look at it right now where Tiger already had the chance to basically put all these new golfers into the public discussion, and nobody cares about any of them. Bryson and Brooks, nobody cares, okay? I care because I like golf, and I think it was kind of fun for a little while, and I'm curious to see how it plays out, and I like seeing a little bit of personality in a sport that hasn't had a lot of, you know, trash talk where Brooks says we're not rivals because you've never really beat me. You have no majors against me. I have this many. You have one. I think he has four. But there's no real compelling golfer. There's no person in the sport that, and I know golf fans always freak out at me when I say this kind of stuff, but nobody cares about Jon Rahm. Nobody cares about JT. Nobody cares. No casual sports person who's just like, you know, watches the odd couple of basketball games, watches some of this, and maybe you don't care about them, but I do. The person who's like, I'm going to walk up and buy a ticket tonight. I'm going to buy in on a Blue Jays team when they're good. They don't really care about who's on the last day at a major. So the weird one for me here is that Tiger Woods is basically telling you, the fans like me, who have always sort of believed in, and I'm not even a Tiger Woods fan. I love rooting against Tiger. He actually reminds me of Kobe, where I miss him now for what he brought me as a sports fan, but I wasn't a fan. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't a fanboy. But Tiger Woods is telling you that he's done, and he's basically trying to put that out there to his fans to be like, hey, I don't want to have to live with every time I go play at an event or every time I show up somewhere, the 48-hour news cycle of where Tiger Woods is going to be at, or give my fans any hope. Like, he's telling you how it is. He outlined his surgeries. He talked about having to climb Everest, and he knows what it takes. Like, he's been at the very top, mm-hmm. and he just knows, like, him winning, it's done. That's why he referenced the Masters. So I was sad, and it weirdly, it felt like the real finality of his greatness.
And I think it's important that you noted that it's him telling his fans, because I didn't think of it that perspective. Yeah. But even last week when he posted that video of him playing, I was right on it right away. It was on my A-list. I was like, Tiger Woods. Come back. Like, he's on his way. But
he looked like he was trying not to fall over, but
yes. But, like, I think it's easy for fans who have grown up with Tiger Woods being the face of golf and the reason that a lot of casual fans get into golf to be excited by that and to have expectations that are not realistic. So I think him coming out and doing this big interview and talking and kind of putting the truth out there that, as sad as it is, he's never going to get back to mm-hmm. that level. And I think it helps fans understand that, digest it, and just be happy for his progress. And I just thought it was really special, the amount that he talked about his son and like mm-hmm. how much he values spending that time with him now. And just like the little things that he's getting back, like just this one quote, I'm happy to be able to go out there and watch Charlie play or go in the backyard and have an hour or two by myself with no one talking, no music, no nothing. I just hear the birds chirping. That part I've so sorely missed. It's like, take a step back and realize like he could have lost his life. Like mm-hmm. there's so much that happened, and we should just be very grateful that he's able to do some of the things he loves again. And maybe this is a really good opportunity for him to, as I said, lean into his family and his son, and maybe he gets into coaching or does something different. But yeah, as a fan, it was a necessary article almost to kind of get that closure that, hey, we're gonna let Tiger go out and live his life.
He's just so driven. He again, to compare him to Kobe, it's one of those, well, you just can't count this guy out. Like, you can't. And I had already done it when I was making fun of Tiger fans saying he was never going to win again. And then he goes out and has 2019. And so I think there is a little bit of a part where you went, no way, he'll still, if there's anybody who could do it, it's Tiger. Just like it was Kobe. And then all of a sudden Kobe's taking 100 shots in a game and he's missing them all. And he's got no lift and he can barely run. And you're like, oh, boy. And I think that's going to be a bit of the experience with watching Tiger when he does finally start to show up at golf courses. You also, I think, have to take into account that when that actually happens, when you see him at maybe a tournament, we're talking about still like not this summer, like coming up, the one after. And he's going to be older. He mentioned it. 11 surgeries he had even before this car accident.
Yeah.
He's put a lot of weight on, or a lot of toll on that body. He's put a lot of mileage on that body. We have to go to the break and we'll keep doing text lines throughout the show. We got two more blocks where we can do this. But my only thing that I'm kind of curious about now is, you know, how good is at Charlie? Because we talk about him a lot and he sort of seemingly comes up a decent amount, and Tiger would sort of know these things. Mm-hmm. And I find it kind of interesting that right after we had this documentary on Tiger Woods and the relationship with his father and, you know, the gift and the curse, that it doesn't seem like Tiger is, you know, Earl. But there is kind of this element of like, hey, now I'm coaching my kid though, and now I want to watch my kid play, and my kid's playing, and I'm like, isn't that a little bit of you on, you know, the Johnny Carson show? Like, isn't there like a little flavor of that happening here? Like, wouldn't you want to be a little bit more protective of him? You're making this huge, I don't want to say retirement speech, but kind of close to that. And you're sort of referencing how you're putting your energy in your son. And I don't know, maybe that's just poor PR. Maybe that's just me being over the top with it. But I kind of look at that and I say, hey, that seems like a decent amount of pressure on him. That actually makes me think that a lot of Tiger fans are going to switch off of you and start to be like, all right, when's Charlie coming?
Well, you got 7 years or so.
Yeah.
At least. Like, he's 11.
But that's what I'm saying is that he's really young, and he's already sort of been in the eye of the public and especially of the golf world for quite some time. And yeah, I can kind of see this narrative of he is around his son for a couple of years, and all of a sudden Charlie becomes the savior for golf or makes golf relevant again. And he's, like you said, that connects people to the sport. And so it's going to be an easy thing for people to try to latch onto at any moment where he has a halfway decent golf tournament. That's all.
Before we go to break.
Yeah. What do you got to do?
Ailish, you have something to give away.
Before we go to break, I have something exciting for our listeners.
She's giving you her Take 5 bar that she got.
You
She's
wish.
Not eating it.
She's not even giving me and JD one.
They did arrive. So Leaf fans, listen up. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Leafs December 7th game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the special code word that will be included in the podcast. Once you've identified today's code word, which is given to you by me, so listen for my voice, text it to 590-590 to be entered for your chance to win. The winner will be selected tomorrow, Wednesday, December 1st. Oh my God, it's December already. So if you want to win tickets to see your Toronto Maple Leafs crush the Columbus Blue Jackets, just listen on today's episode of the Fan Morning Show podcast for the secret code word.
Good job.
Thank you.
That's a nice ad read. We're going to talk to Trey Wingo after the break. We're going to talk NFL week 12. We're going to talk a little bit more. And we're going to poke JD about the Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll stuff. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports on 590 The Fan.